Hi, thanks so much, Bill, for your talk. I appreciate it. But my question is, when you came to the company originally, and the vision was kind of established, and it was an established company, but you were tasked with taking it to the next level, what were some of the things you did maybe in the first few weeks or months to establish buy-in, or some of the things that you did to assess the company and to build kind of your team or your vision to take it to the next level or to the future? What are the things maybe originally when you first entered the company that you did?
That's a very good question, and I thank you for it. Back to my QLP process. I did what my late father said to me one time, and he said, when I had a summer job at the factory, and he said, you know what? He said, let me give you some really good advice. Be quiet, shut up, and listen. And I said, oh, okay, well, think about that. And the important part was the listening part, the assessment stage. I took the first month, I went around and talked to people. I sat down and I said to the accounting manager, hey, I'd like to spend an hour or 2 hours, and I'd like to just see what you do and how you do it. And I listened. I listened to what was going well. I listened to what wasn't going well and began to take that assessment and put together a potential plan. Because anybody that goes in like a bull in a china shop more than likely will fail. But you take that assessment, measure what you've got, see what you have, both in terms of talented people, non-talented people, or people that, and this is part of the team building. What I knew after about 4 weeks, I had a pretty good idea of those people who, though successful in the old model, were probably not going to be successful in the model that I was going to put forward. We were going to put in metrics, and we were going to do advanced technology. It was clear. And those people who had been solid citizens, contributors over the years, but did everything on a piece of paper and had everything in their head, they probably were not going to survive for a prolonged period of time. Because again, building the right team and going forward. Okay. That answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Hi, Bill. My name is Caitlin Lesk, and I loved what you said about stay the course. That really hit home for me, because that's definitely one of my weaknesses, is that when new project opportunities come up, I tend to jump around a lot. So I'm curious what your evaluation strategy is when you decide when to stay the course and when something that might have more of an impact comes up, when to reprioritize.
Mm-hmm. Very good. A good question. Again, I believe, and it has served me well, that everything that I do has a business plan that has, in fact, basically come from the strategic framework, gone into a plan, then to the strategic objectives and the daily goals. The goals that I'm going to use for the day or week or month. As those goals, if you start and you start to look at those goals and you say, I'm hitting those goals, then it kind of cascades upward. And if you're not hitting the goals because something has changed, you need to be aware of that. Here's a good example. In Pocket Nurse for 20 years, there was no customer service, no customer service team. We had a sales force, and the sales force took orders. And the fact was that when competition entered the market, which there wasn't any competition for the first 18 to 20 years, the word Salesforce was a misnomer. They didn't sell anything. They were technically proficient. They knew the products. And they waited for the phone to ring and said, okay, what do you got? Okay, I'll take your order. Good, got my commission. That they didn't sell anything. At that point, when you start to see the competition increase, then all of a sudden you better change course. Now we have a customer service team of 12 people. They answer it. I was explaining this morning, the nurse educator is 90% of our customer base. They are mostly, at this point, retired nurses who've gone on to the university and colleges to teach. They carry around our catalog. And 40%, I'd like you to think about this, because if you're not amazed, I was certainly amazed, 40% of our orders coming in every day come in over the fax machine. The other 20 and another 26%, so a total of 66, two out of every three orders, the rest come in via phone. I got 40% in fax, 26% in phone, because they want to talk to somebody. They love to talk to people. And when I absolutely makes me crazy when I look at the call duration. And I'll go back up to one of the ladies and I'll say, Dana, you took 10 calls today in 8 hours. Well, yeah, but they want to talk about the kids, how they're doing, all of those kind of things. And that's part of what we had to adjust, because in fact, it was important. It is important. Now I'm going to adjust that one more time and use this example. Those same nurse educators who bought our products for years no longer, in many cases, have the authority to do the orders. They've all gone to the purchasing department. And I can tell you, a purchasing agent doesn't use a fax, doesn't want to talk to anybody on the phone. They want to have an interactive process that goes right into my website. And by the way, we only had a website. The first time we had a website was four or five years ago. Never had one before, didn't need one. Had the catalog, 180 pages of. And I went to a school and I met a nurse educator and she said, oh, I got your catalog. And on that catalog, she had all these little post-its. It was like this weird thing. And she had all these little red and blue and green and little notes made on it. This was like her Bible. Because she had her curriculum tied up with the products so she could order the products. Now that's changing. Now you go back to the purchasing agent who calls me up and says, and calls up our team and our sales team and says, okay, what about free transportation? What about price? Those kinds of things. That's when you change course. You pay attention to what's going on at all levels, and you modify the course at that point in time. Okay.
So I'm curious. Can you talk to the salespeople in the room? Last breakfast, I don't remember the context of how it came up, but you talked about how FedEx basically just took over all of your business, I believe, and shocked the post office after many, many years.
Yep.
I'm just curious, so... And I know in your past job, I guess you implemented SAP software. So when you're, for the salespeople who are coming to companies like yours in such a large one, what advice do you have for them? I'm sure you get pitched every day, get emails every day. I'm just curious, what advice do you have on the other side, sitting on the other side of the table for salespeople?
That's a good point. Salespeople, as we all know, and I have the greatest respect for salespeople, they're a different type of individual to be part of the team. They have to be. Okay, they're not driven by, normally speaking, most business models do not drive salespeople by either service or profitability. Those salespeople are normally driven by their commission structure or their bonus plans and so forth. That doesn't say that they don't do a great job and that they have a very important purpose. But you have to make sure that the way that you align them and the goals that you put out in front of them are going to, in fact, motivate them the way you want them to be motivated. So at Pocket Nurse, for example, we used to have a commission program. We don't anymore. We now have a base salary that goes to with a bonus program based on goals, and they also share in the performance indicators as well for profitability, for budget control, and for return on any investment for project. So you get them more involved with the total, depending on what the company is and depending on what products you're selling and your market. Does that help? Okay. Yes. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I really appreciated what you said about building a team. So my question is really about building a team and kind of setting a goal. I work for the Department of Human Services, and I'm leading a team that's opening up government data from human service data to the public. So I received the vision, and I also received the team. So
you received a group of people, but okay.
Yeah, I received a group of people, exactly. And we really are on the cutting edge of this type of thing. Not very many people have released human service data to the public. So the goal is scary, and the team is a little bit reluctant. I've chosen to just keep pushing forward so far, but I wonder, what is your advice for a good method for establishing a collaborative relationship with these people under those circumstances?
Good question. The answer I would give you is management by objective. I would say that particularly with what you just described, I would make sure that the work steps, that the team understands, these are going to be our work steps. Remember the old adage, how do you eat an elephant? One spoon at a time. So set those things, break it all up, go together and evaluate each work step so that you're not just dumping things out there and into the unknown, because you have an unknown arena out there as to what's going to happen when you open up that data. So maybe it's not a big bang, but rather you do it out in phases and see what the reaction is so that you can, in fact, adjust. That would be the way I would go. Your project management, I would suggest that you take your project management and you outline it very detailed. And don't plan on saying, okay, well, April the 15th, we're going to open the doors, because April 16th could be very miserable. Okay? But if you do it and you say, by the way, on April the 15th, we're going to do phase one. And then phase two, and maybe phase 2A. Do it out in a little bit so that you have the opportunity to see what the reaction is, to see so that you can then adjust and have the time to adjust. Make sense? Okay.
Hi, Bill. Thank you so much for sharing with us this morning. I really appreciated your two steps, and I was wondering about people who are most successful in leadership, if they are people who start with a vision or people who are naturally gifted in leadership, what that process looks like, how to find someone who can be successful.
What was the first part, the people who are either naturally gifted or?
Or are driven by a vision. So if they start with the vision or if they start with leadership gifting.
Okay, well then I'll do the tap dance, because the answer is both. Okay, not every person can be a leader. All right. My late mother wanted me to be a brain surgeon, except when I cut my finger, I faint at the sight of blood. So it doesn't make any difference how hard I wanted to become a brain surgeon. I couldn't do that. That wasn't realistic. There are people who are, in fact, there are some natural leaders. They draw people together. But there's also, I think there's leadership capabilities in every person who is willing to get involved, to talk, speak, and to be able to say, I'd like to take this project, I'd like to take this effort, and I'd like to take it to the end result. Whether that is managing the Girl Scout cookie campaign or whatever, it needs a leader to orchestrate the work steps, to be able to outline them, and make sure that they get executed properly. So, the events like this, and obviously all of your commitment, you're interested in polishing and enhancing your own leadership skills. And that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And for those people who don't want to be leaders, they know that. And they're not going to volunteer. How many times have you had a group in a little conference room and you say, okay, who'd like to take this and who'd like to take? There's always somebody who's at the very end going, oh my God. They're going to call on me. Please don't call on me. Okay? That sort of thing. So the leaders take over, and you try to make sure that that person who hasn't asked for a particular responsibility, you try to fit the right responsibility to that individual. Because, again, remember the different types of people. Okay?
Bill, Russell Livingston, thank you so much for being here. Enjoyed this. You talked about listening and assessment and a deeper understanding of employees and how to put them together, and you discussed the predictive index tool. Mm-hmm. We're using that as well and have found that to be a tremendous resource. Kind of a question for the group. By show of hands, how many people in their work have been tested for or through a predictive index type tool? Can we get a show of hands? So I think that's one of the things that might be missing in a lot of leadership styles or a lot of leadership techniques is that they're running their play as opposed to running that collaborative play. Mm-hmm. And when you talked about the application and some of the changes that you made, you talked about bringing in a matrix and contending with some people that just weren't good fits. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit more about your strategies in dealing with that on a human level and kind of creating either new opportunity, deeper understanding, better programming, or simply having to have that tough conversation?
Yeah. No, very good question. In my last 10 years at Kodak, I was responsible for both Latin America and Asia, and my teams installed SAP across 35 countries on a single instance platform, which was no small task, trying to get all of these different countries to agree to certain frameworks and so forth. And we, matter of fact, we just recently put in a new ERP platform at PocketNurse. And if you look at the statistics, when you put in, and that's just a project, the normal loss or the normal turnover is 10 to 12% of your staff. And we knew that up front. We knew there were people. We have a group of people that have been with us 15 years. And whether or not they were going to be able to embrace that change and take on that new technology, they were incredibly fearful. So we engaged all of those folks in months ahead of time in education, in change management. We brought in, we did a lot of testing ahead of time, all of those types of things to try to mitigate what the loss would be. Because what happens in those environments, and we had a very regrettable situation 2 weeks ago, I lost two. And they were on the borderline. And the one lady came in, and she's a lovely lady, been with the company a number of years, and she said, "Bill, I couldn't even get out of bed in the morning. My stomach was just in knots. I was so scared." That's not a good situation. Now, we had three other people that we were able to relocate to different assignments within the company. But yes, there's always going to be the time. You summarized it very well. What you try to do is to try to mitigate that with a plan ahead of time that says, hey, is this really going to be a fit? If we're changing so much, how do we change more effectively so that we can really make sure that we save and we take advantage of people that are good people? But yeah, there's always a couple of difficult discussions. I mean, there's going to come a day for every person, my belief. The day, and I think the speaker, the motivational speaker, Tom Peters, for those of you that know Tom Peters, that dates me because that's back in the 80s and 90s. Great speaker. And what he said was, he got up there and he's incredibly vivacious and, and he said, "You've got to get up in the morning and you eat change for breakfast. I want a bowl of change." But what he really said, which was at the end, which is most important, the day that we can no longer accept change, internalize change in our careers, that's when our career is over. That's when it's done. So the ability to, and you'll find it at different levels and for different people. Right? I've seen it with executives at 45 years old that could no longer, there's nothing magic about age. It's about what you do to accept the change, to go with that change, and make it work for you. Okay. I.e. the fax machines.
We have time for one more, and then we'll do a group session.
I just wanted to know, what are some of your self and professional development practices that you do personally that keep you moving forward as an effective leader?
I did say, and I have a witness here with my wife, it's almost to the point of being a little too much, but I do embrace quality leadership. I embrace the assess, plan, do, verify on my personal side of my life as well. When my children were growing up, they wanted a dog. They desperately wanted a dog. I've never had a dog my whole life. And frankly, wasn't particularly interested. But at 8, 10, and 11, those three that wanted that dog, I sat them down and I said they'll need to fill out a business plan. And I'm serious. I mean, absolutely serious. I simplified and I had them sit down and do a business plan. And they bought a book on dogs and they filled out the forms and everything else. And then they had a brilliant idea. They had a brilliant idea that on Saturday morning, the family was going to go to the vet who would help us to choose the right breed of dog. What a wonderful time. And away Saturday morning we went, had a little breakfast and go over to the vet's office. Then we had to wait to see the vet for about 20 minutes. And as people came out, they were watching the cash register, $85, $120, you know, $35. And I said, there's a flaw in your financial plan. Because your allowances won't do it. But I do. I believe in it wholeheartedly. I've embraced it with my children. My wife, not so much. She's more of a free-flowing person, and I love her for that. Maybe that's what, you know, makes us work together so well and be together so well. But I use the process. I'm a process-oriented person. There's nothing that I do that I don't try to follow some sort of a process and evaluate and then look for corrective action.
Along those lines, can you just tell them, don't you require every employee to do X amount of learning each year? I think that would be interesting.
Oh, yeah. I believe in this wholeheartedly. Again, part of the company wellness and development program, every employee at Pocket Nurse, mandatory, has to have 20 hours of education per year. Mandatory. We provide it, we pay for it, and it's on our time. We have a learning database, and I'm talking about right down to housekeeping and warehousing and truck loaders. Doesn't make any difference, all the way through, myself included, and we do a minimum of 20 hours of education. It's documented and it's part of the performance appraisal process.
Do you do workshops?
We do a combination of things, and it doesn't necessarily have to be aligned. We also, a part of our wellness program, we bring in the investors, the investment counselor from the 401k 3 times a year to try to get people to understand what they're looking at for the future. And there's no cost to that. We do lunch and learns. We're very big on lunch and learns. I get up there and talk about budgets and how to manage your credit cards, okay? Because I'm crazy with those things, and so forth. But we bring them together, we'll have a lunch and learn. We also bring in our vendors for the products that we don't manufacture. They come in, we provide a lunch, and they demonstrate products. And we have a wide range of products, so it's kind of interesting.
Can you tell them the product you mentioned at the other breakfast? I just think it's crazy.
We have everything, and again, we have everything for the nursing schools and EMSs. We sell cotton balls, and we sell cotton tip swabs, but we also carry a full line of things like simulated blood. And we have the arm that you can then do an IV to put the blood into. We sell simulated urine for catheterization. Nurses need to be able to catheterize. We sell all of those types of things, but we also sell high-end mannequins. These are mannequins. We have mannequins that are $150,000, $200,000. They talk. They answer questions. And one of our latest ones, a couple of years, and now it's been redeveloped, is Noelle. I love Noelle. Noelle delivers babies. She delivers a baby. I mean, she's up in the stirrups and the toes wiggle and she's moaning and screaming and all of those sorts of things and the blood pressure's going. And trust me, it's a whole lot different than injecting an orange or in another nurse. They have hands-on simulated experience. You get a chance, Google nursing simulation. There's some stuff from the universities that'll show you 5-10 minutes on the things that go on in terms of simulation. It's an amazing industry. It's an amazing future as we go forward.
Thank you, Bill.
You're welcome.
I'm going to run you up.